flown, I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Detour, there's a muddy road ahead, detour. Paid no mind to what it said, detour. Oh, these bitter things I find should have read that detour sign. Headed down life's crooked road, lots of things I never know, and cause of me not knowing I now find. Trouble got in the trail, spent the next 5 years in jail. Should have read that detour sign. Detour, there's a muddy road ahead, detour. Paid no mind to what it said, detour. Oh, these bitter things I find, should have read that detour sign. I got right to the place where it said about face. I thought that all my worries were behind, but the farther I go, the more sorrow I know. Should have read that detour sign. Detour, there's a muddy road ahead, detour. Paid no mind to what it said, detour. Oh, these bitter things I find, should have read that detour sign. When I got stuck in the mud, all my hopes dropped with a thud. I guess that my heartstrings are made of twine. Had no willpower to get from the hole that I'm in, yet should have read that detour sign. Detour, there's a muddy road ahead, detour. Paid no mind to what it said, detour. All these bitter things I find, should have read that detour sign. Should have read that detour sign. Should have read that detour sign.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Hope you're all having a fantastic weekend. Tonight, we have two great mysteries for you. We begin with the Candy Matson series. This was a woman detective who did a marvelous job, and it was back about 1950. I think you'll really enjoy it. Its locale is the San Francisco area. And then we proceed to a gentleman from England by the name of Sherlock Holmes. I haven't played that before for you, but I think you'll really enjoy that too. If you have any questions or would like to reach me, please write to Bruce at radiomasterpieces.com. I'll be sure and get back to you. Again, have a marvelous weekend. Thanks so much for tuning in. And now, let's enjoy our two great shows.
He presents Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Just a moment. People can barge in on me at the... Now, where is that? Oh, that's better than nothing. Wait a second.
Hi, Candy.
Well, Millard, my favorite foot flap. You caught me at the wrong time.
Depends on your viewpoint. Shall I leave?
No, come on in. What brings you up to Telegraph Hill, Millard, dear?
You.
An interesting subject. Care for a drink?
No, I'm on duty.
You mean I'm being honored with an official call?
Sort of.
In that case, you can leave.
No, seriously, Candy. You can help me if you will.
Well, the mountain coming to the mountain.
Oh, you're not so large.
Now you can leave.
Only kidding. Here's a pitch. An acquaintance of mine, Gordon Ayers, has a little problem on his hands. He needs your help.
What is this?
Oh, don't get excited, Candy. He's an insurance adjuster for an aviation outfit here in San Francisco. A couple of months ago, a guy and his wife took off in a private plane from one of those little airports down the peninsula and crashed. She burned to death. Ayers investigated and okayed the claim. A rather fancy amount. But his company doesn't like it. They don't think the crash was legit.
It gets interesting.
He has to prove he was right. He came to me, wanted us to verify the facts. But we're the San Francisco police, and that's out of our jurisdiction.
So?
So, I mentioned you.
Oh.
He wants to meet you and have a little talk. If you can get the guy out of the soup, there's a nice little hunk of cabbage in it for you.
Mallard, I'll take it, but there's something phony.
How do you mean, Kenny?
This is the first time you've ever given me a helping hand in my private eyeing.
Could be there's a reason.
Could be a reason why I'm going to take the case, too. Must be the rabbit in me. I love to nibble on large hunks of cabbage. Well, that's the way it started. Inspector Ray Mallard, an old friend of mine, and that's all I can call him, darn it, an old friend of mine, dropped by and insisted I meet this Gordon Ayers, an aviation insurance adjuster. Two things induced me to take the deal. Mallard's big spaniel-like eyes and the money angle. It was right after Christmas, and I was a bit short. Mallard left, and I took the slip of paper he'd given me with Ayers' phone number on it, sat down by Amici's pet aversion, and doodled with the dial.
Good afternoon, Pacific Seaboard Fidelity.
How do you do? Is there a Mr. Gordon Ayers there?
Speaking.
Inspector Mallard suggested I call you Mr. Ayers. This is Candy Matson.
Oh, Miss Matson, yes. Happy to know you. I imagine Mallard explained my dilemma.
Not in detail, no.
Well, the situation is quite complicated. I was wondering if we could meet and discuss it at length. Can we get together this afternoon?
If you say so, yes.
Time is of the utmost importance, Miss Matson.
All right, you call it, Mr. Ayers.
Splendid. I'm just leaving the office now. I have an appointment down the peninsula in an hour. Do you have a car?
Yes, I do.
Could you meet me at the San Mateo Airport? Cranston Flying Service.
That's okay. About an hour and a half?
Hour and a half, fine. Goodbye, Miss Matson.
This I didn't like. Already I was money in the hole. San Mateo Airport. Right on the water next to Bay Meadows, separated by the highway and a couple of salt marshes. Why should I have to meet the guy down there? Oh, me. Well, I drove down to the San Mateo Airport, found the Cranston Flying Service building, and got out of the car and waited. It was a nice afternoon, so I stood watching some of the planes take off and land.
Pardon me, you aren't by any chance... Oh, no, of course not.
No, I'm not by any chance. I'm Candy Matson. Are you Mr. Ayers?
That's right. I didn't expect anyone quite so young.
Well, did you want to talk, Mr. Ayers, or just stand there like a sea bass out of water?
Pardon me. I want to talk, of course. By the way, have you ever flown?
On commercial airlines, many times. Why?
Would you like to take a little hop this afternoon?
Hmm? What? What's that got to do with why I'm here?
Plenty. It'll give you a picture of what I'm up against.
In what do we fly, and who's going to be our guiding angel?
Well, we'll probably fly in that Cessna over there, and I shall do the piloting.
Well, I don't know. Have you been flying long?
About 20 years.
Oh.
And I also flew for Uncle Sam in the late mess over Germany.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Good. Let's go into the office.
Mother told me there would be days like this. Candy, she used to say, never leave the house without your parachute. We slipped through some prop wash, and I displayed a bit of silk that didn't belong to a parachute. Then into the building that housed the Cranston office. It was typical. A glass-top counter with various flying trophies hung about the walls. Old propellers, silver cups, pictures of planes, and assorted certificates. Ayers plopped his wallet on the counter, and the chap proceeded to check him out. We went out onto the field and climbed into the plane. Then Ayers gunned the motor, and we were taking off. This is all very cozy, Mr. Ayers, but what's the idea?
There's a very definite reason for it, Miss Matson. See that tower down there?
Mm-hmm.
No, down there toward Redwood City.
Oh, yes, I see it.
Oh, that's where we're going. About a mile east of that, there's a private airport run by a man named Folger. We're going to simulate a landing at that field.
Well, I'm still not with it.
I want you to notice all the physical qualities of that field as we come in for a landing. Notice the boundaries, the hazards, and the amount of free space a plane has, especially a light plane.
You make me feel like a latter-day Nellie Bly. Okay, Mr. Ayers, let's go. I'll watch. Fascinated as I am by flying, I started looking around. The lower end of the bay on our left, the skyline to our right, and the bustling peninsula directly beneath us. I was shocked out of my reverie when the plane turned on its side and we cut sharply to our right and out over the bay. I thought Ayers had lost control of the ship, but no, it was just a routine bank. Then another bank right, and we were nosing in toward an airfield down and in front of us.
Did I startle you?
A little. It's all right now that I know we're not playing tag with gravity.
I'm going to cut the throttle now and nose in for a fake landing.
I'm glad you told me. I'll know how to behave.
Keep your eyes open, Miss Matson. Do you see any high-tension lines around the airport?
No.
Any fences, highways, or any other obstructions?
No, I don't.
Now look, this is a normal landing.
Mm-hmm.
Now if I were to sit the plane down here, I'd be about a mile from the waterfront. Then if I let the plane taxi the usual amount, I'd be up by those hangars. Any problems about that?
None that I can see at the moment.
Now look carefully. You see anything at all? Anything?
No. If I didn't know better, I'd say we were in the Sahara.
Okay, then I'm going to give it the gun.
Without the wheels touching the ground, we were climbing into the sky again and back toward the San Mateo airport. In less than minutes, Ayers brought the plane in for a neat landing, and we were over a very dry martini in a little spot in Burlingame. Okay, we've played charades long enough, Mr. Ayers. Cut me in on the plot.
It's merely this. The man who owns that airport, Folger, was out flying with his wife one afternoon. Brand new plane. They came in for a normal landing. Just as we did. As far as I could figure out, the plane nosed over, caught fire. He escaped. His wife didn't. As the adjuster on the case, I pulled a straight accident and asked my company to pay the claim.
They didn't like the idea.
Well, you know how insurance companies are, Miss Matson. Naturally, they have to be suspicious. But in this case, their fears are groundless.
Mm-hmm. What about Folger? Where is he now?
Still running the airport.
Now, let's get down to cases, Mr. Ayers. Just why did I get the free plane ride this afternoon?
Well, I've known your friend Mallard for some time. I wanted him to sign this affidavit saying the field is perfectly safe for normal flying. He wouldn't do it.
Naturally.
Naturally, being with the San Francisco police. Then he suggested you. I have to have some licensed representative of the law's signature in order to clear my neck with my company. Here, you saw for yourself. You sign it?
Whoa there, boy. Wait a minute. Feather your prop.
You mean you won't sign it?
I didn't say that. But I don't sign anything until I read the fine print, not even for my pal Mellon. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave now, after I have another olive and what goes with it. Then I'm going home. I'll call you tomorrow afternoon sometime.
But, Miss Matson,
don't start to argue, Mr. Ayers. After my second olive, I get very stubborn. This got wilder by the moment. I was supposed to sign an affidavit clearing this joker on the basis of a 30-second buzz over a cow pasture. But oh no, I wasn't going to get caught with my flaps down, not for Mallard or anybody. I drove home to my penthouse on Telegraph Hill, dished up a warm tub, some warm soup, and then some warm blankets, and blacked out for the night. In the morning, I drove over to California Street near Old St. Mary's. I wanted to see a good luck piece of mine, Rembrandt Watson. Rembrandt's a photographer, and tops in his profession now that he's not supplying the rent for all the bistros on the Barbary Coast.
Candy, my lily. Greetings.
If I was a GI, I'd slug you for that. How are you, Rembrandt?
Strictly, je suis très bon. That's French.
Well, that's your opinion. And that's English.
Oh, dove. You look as well scrubbed as Mount Diablo after a rainfall.
There's a romantic parallel.
What brings you about on this lovely day?
This lovely day. How would you like to go for a little drive, Duffy?
Let's see. I was supposed to have tea with Diogenes Murphy, the honest Irishman. But he'll understand. Yes, I'd love it. Where are we going and why?
San Mateo. And for why, I don't know.
Well, that's San Mateo for you. Anyone else going with us?
No, just the two of us.
Oh, good. Then I shan't have to ride in the tunnel. Wait just a moment, Dove. Toss Henry the Great Dane a brisket or two, and I'll be right with you.
Rembrandt fed his monster. We piled into the car and whisked off to San Mateo. On the way down, I tried to plot a course of action. It wasn't easy. As my friend Ayers had said, the field was free from flaws, and where do you go from there? I was soon to find out.
Is this our destination, Dove?
That's right.
Added little spot for...
Yes?
Reminds me of the recruiting posters I used to see for the Foreign Legion.
Come on, Rembrandt. I want to see something.
What, dear?
The other side of this hangar over here.
What's over there?
The burnt fuselage of a plane.
You can't be, girl. Your sense of the macabre knows no bounds.
Can't help it. This is business.
Is that the one?
I should imagine so. Quite a mess, isn't it? A horrible way to go. Look it over, Rembrandt. Anything strike you as strange?
Wait a moment. Yes. Why are there tattered pieces of fabric on this side of the plane and on the other, nothing but melted steel frame?
Good point, Lattie. And another thing. Look inside the cabin there. The safety belt on the other side. Intact.
So it is.
And I should sign affidavits yet. Wait till I see that Mallard.
Pardon me. Was there something you wanted?
Oh, how do you do?
Not like it looks, dear.
Did you want a ride? Is that why you're here? We have cubs, Cessnas, just about anything.
No, nothing like that.
Then, what is it? I happen to own this airport, and I don't like people poking about.
But the owner? Well, then you must be Mr. Folger.
Yes. That's right. Who are you?
Santa Claus. A little late. Come on, Mr. Folger. Let's go into your office. I'm sure we have a lot to talk about. Folger led the way, and we went into a little Quonset hut type of building that served as the airport office. There were no trophies here, nothing but bareness. On one side was a pot-bellied stove, and on the other a mangy-looking parrot inside a cage. Folger motioned us to a couple of firehouse chairs and sat down himself in one that swiveled.
Now then, what's this all about?
I'm Candy Matson. This is my friend, Mr. Watson.
I see.
I'll be frank with you, Mr. Folger. I'm working with a Mr. Gordon Ayers of the Pacific Seaboard Fidelity Company.
What?
That's right. And they're holding up payment of your claim until Ayers can get a signed affidavit verifying his judgment.
Fidelity!
What in
Fidelity!
Pay no attention, Miss Matson. That bull parrot picks up anything you say. I must admit this is somewhat of a shock.
I thought it would be. Now, is there anything you can do to help me? Pictures, diagrams, anything like that?
Yes, I have a complete file, including a newspaper photograph of the crash itself.
May I see them?
Newspaper! Crash!
Quiet, you idiot!
Quiet, you idiot! Quiet, you idiot! Quiet.
Yes, you may see them. I keep them in my apartment in the city. If you'd care to drop by this evening, I'll show them to you.
Good. Supposing you give me a call when you get in town. Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
I'll write that down.
Candy Matson.
That's right, Polly.
NC 98012.
I said quiet. Oh, someday I'll wring that blasted bird's neck. The only reason I keep her around is because she belonged to my wife. There. I'll call you this evening, Miss Matson.
We left the place, got in the car, drove back down the road, and ducked into a little clump of trees well hidden. Rembrandt looked at me as though I was losing my mind. But in about 10 minutes, we heard the sound of a car coming from the airport. It roared past us, and at the wheel was Folger. That's all I wanted. I whipped us back to the Quonset hut, fully expecting the place to be locked tighter than a drum, but it wasn't. The door was wide open.
What's the idea, Candy?
I'm not sure, Rembrandt. It's just a hunch. That open door, though, means we're going to have to work fast.
Work fast? Of course.
My telephone number is Yukon, not NC something or other. I have a sneaking idea that somewhere back in the dim recesses of that parrot's memory, I can get a key to this whole thing. Hello, Polly. Pretty Polly. Give me a pencil, Linda.
Pencil? Here.
Thanks. Pretty Polly. Candy Matson, Yukon 28209. Pretty Polly. Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Candy Matson,
NC.
NC. 98012. 9-8-0-1-2.
9-8-0-1-2, that's it. Thanks, Polly. Come on, Rembrandt, let's get gone with the wind. I left Rembrandt off at Diogenes Murphy's place on Van Ness Avenue and drove downtown. I ran into a present-day miracle by finding a place to park, then took the elevator up to the offices of the Pacific Seaboard Fidelity Company. I spotted Ayers' office and walked in.
Well, Miss Matson, sit down. You're as good as your word.
Thanks.
Got anything for me?
I may have, but first I want to know if you've got anything for me. Some little piece of information you've been holding out. From your own company, for instance?
I don't quite understand you, Miss Matson.
I'll come to the point, then. How in the name of Kitty Hawk could you honestly pay a claim on that wreck at Folgers Airport? The plane was obviously burned only on one side, the passengers. And also, the passenger's safety belt was still intact, tightly fastened.
You're a suspicious little thing, aren't you?
Well, I'm like the insurance company.
I made the same mistake myself. That fuselage you saw was a training plane. It cracked up on a routine flight. No one hurt. The plane in which Mrs. Folger was killed was sold for scrap a week after my formal investigation.
Well, looks like I pulled the trigger on the wrong target.
Yeah, well, that's all right. As I said, I made the same mistake myself. However, I don't think it was advisable for you to go down there without consulting me first.
Oh?
Folger called me on the phone right after you left. You've given him a fine case of the jitters.
Look, Mr. Ayers, I operate in my own manner. If I saw reason to give Folger's cow pasture the once-over, that says it should be. And if that isn't agreeable to you, you can get another boy or girl.
Oh, now, wait a moment. I'm sorry. No, you continue doing as you are.
Good.
Naturally, you want to be fair about this thing, and I can't blame you.
Right.
Now then, what's the next step, Miss Matson?
Well, offhand, I really don't know. I'll call you first thing in the morning.
First thing in the morning, fine.
I knew what the next step was, but I wasn't telling Ayers or anybody. This was more than just working for a commission. I felt I was on to something now, and I was going to follow through. I called a friend of mine at an aviation insurance brokerage and got enough night work to keep me going until next St. Swithin's Day. I took my material home and started in. It was a history of every fatal plane crash in the United States for the past 10 years. About 11, I fixed some coffee. About 2, I started to nod. Pinched my cheeks and snapped out of it. About 4, I had some more coffee. And at 7, just as the sky dawned, red streaked across the bay, I found what I wanted. Exactly what I wanted. It didn't tie together yet, not all of it. But the knot was now begun. It only needed a little tightening. I stretched out on the couch, set the alarm for 9, and woke up right on schedule. Once again, I got Ayers on the phone.
Pacific Seaport Fidelity, Ayers speaking.
Good morning, Mr. Ayers. Candy Matson.
Oh, good morning, Miss Matson. How do things look?
Well, if you're referring to me, awful. I've been up all night. By the way, I wonder if we could make that flight again.
Flight?
Yes, over Folgers Airport. Only this time I'd like to make an actual landing.
Why, sure, that can be arranged.
And I'd like Folger to come with us. I want him to describe just what happened as we go along.
This morning okay?
The sooner the better.
I'll call him right now, have him get a plane ready. I'll meet you there about noon.
Now I had to work fast. I called Mallard, explained the situation, and he agreed to get one of his radio technicians and come along with me. We drove back down the peninsula, and I left them both at Cranston's Flying Service, where they went to work. Then I continued to Folger's Airport. It was a little before noon, and Folger had the ship out on the runway warming it up. Hi there, Mr. Folger. Seen anything of Ayers?
Yeah, he's in the office. He'll be right out. Come on, you can get in.
Okay.
Here comes Ayers now. Here, let me give you a hand. Mm-hmm. You can sit up front and I'll sit back here.
All right. Thank you.
Right on time, I see, Miss Matson.
Yes.
Got the plane gas, Folger?
Yeah, I'll sit.
Well, I guess we can take off. Here we go.
Now then, Miss Matson, what's your plan?
Just do what we did before. Circle out over the bay and come in for a normal landing.
Okay. I'll banker here.
Fine. Now, Is there any way for Folger to take the wheel?
I beg your pardon?
I said, is there any way for Folger to take the wheel?
Oh, why, no, I don't think so. He's back there.
That's because he can't fly, isn't that right? Isn't that right, Folger?
What? What's she talking about, Ayers?
I don't know. She must be out of her head. I'm not taking any chances with her. I'm going to set the ship down right now.
The way you set it down with Folger's wife in it? So she burned beyond recognition?
Why, you...
I can get the whole story, Ayers. Look at Folger, white as a sheet. He's ready to talk right now, aren't you, Folger?
Yes. I'll talk. I'll tell everything.
Including the story about the same kind of crash in Toledo, Ohio?
All right, you two, don't move. I assure you this gun is very deadly. You, Folger, open the starboard door. Go on, open it.
Gordon, you don't know what you're doing.
Oh, yes, I do. And neither one of you are going to live to tell about it. Go on, Folger, get up by the door. Go on.
Gordon, please don't do it.
What a fine rat you are, Ayers.
You're next, Miss Mapson. Just a little too darn smart for your own good, aren't you? I should have known better than to try to use a dame for the fall guy. Go on, stand up by the cabin door.
Sure. Okay. I'll stand up by the cabin...
Oh.
Well, here you go. Let's see you get yourself out of this one. I hope Mallard's still listening to this, Mike. Mallard. Mallard, you big dumb cop, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Candy. What's wrong?
I had to tap Ayers over the head. What do I do now? I don't know how to fly this thing.
Wait a minute. I'll put Crampton on. Matson, listen carefully. Take the wheel and hold it in the middle. Get your nose up a little. That's it.
How am I doing?
Why? Now look down at the horizontal bar at your feet. Press the left one ever so slightly and turn the wheel left at the same time.
Like this?
Get your nose up. Up. So it's just above the horizon. That's it. Keep it there. Better. Now straighten both the bar and the wheel. Slowly. Slowly.
You got it.
Now you're headed towards San Mateo Airport. Now try to drift off to your right a little, using the opposite technique.
Better?
You're doing fine. Hang on, Candy. You're going great. Now look for the protruding gadget on the right side of the dashboard. Mark throttle. Push it in about a third of the way.
I'm falling. Mallard, I'm falling.
No, you're not. Just do as I say. You're coming in for a landing. Now, don't move the wheel or the bars until I tell you to.
Well, the ground's coming up awfully fast.
You're coming in just right. Now, ready? Move back the wheel just a little. No, not too much. That's it. Okay, gal. Right her on in. Now, quick, kill your ignition. Kill it. Turn off the key.
Candy, you made it. Candy, I said, come on, crash, let's get out to that plane.
All right, kid?
Yeah. My knees feel like I did the conga from here to L.A., but otherwise I'm all right.
Now, the boys will take care of Ayers. Come on, we got a report to make.
Report?
Sure. I sent you on to this Ayers guy purposely.
What?
San Mateo didn't want to scare the guy off until they solved the case, so we cut you in on the deal without you knowing it. Candy, you did it. We've got a recording of the whole thing made over the plane's radio. Congratulations, Candy. You'll get a nice hunk of dough for this.
Nice hunk of dough up all the dirty tricks. Mallard, you... I... Oh, what's the use? I can't bawl you out now. I'm airsick. It was a very slick deal. Ayers was a top-notch insurance boy. About 5 years ago, he met up with Folger. This was in Toledo, Ohio. Folger was married to a very wealthy gal, but couldn't get his hands on any of the money. Ayers hit upon a pretty little method of mayhem back there. He took out a license plate under Folger's name, fireproofed his half of the plane, also the passenger's safety belt. Then one fine day, he came in for a landing, deliberately pancaked the ship, left the motor running, and let the crate burn, with Folger's wife in it. They collected plenty. In those days, they had the names of Smith and Jones, or something like that, and Ayers was the insurance adjuster. They moved on to California, took the names of Ayers and Folger, and set about to do an encore on the same old act. Folger met another wealthy gal, married her, and set himself up in the airport business. Ayers got himself a job with a San Francisco insurance outfit, and voila, they were ready for another cracker. My suspicions were first lit up when I saw Ayers' face. He had more scars and stitches than a well-seasoned hockey player. And that broken-up fuselage behind Folger's airport, that was another giveaway. It was a test model they'd used to make sure their plans were all set. But the real giveaway was the parrot. What a memory. NC98012 was the license number of the plane that crashed in Toledo, killing Folger's first wife. The parrot was also her pet, and Folger had kept it for sentimental reasons. He shouldn't ought to have done it, though, because through the parrot I traced the whole thing. It was a nice one-time racket, but they should have quit before the police tripped them up. Oh, yes, Ayers was convicted. And Pacific Seaboard Fidelity rewarded me quite handsomely. But that mallard, deliberately using me for bait. I got even with him, though. I made him take me deep-sea fishing about a week later. Oh, did he get sick. Seasick. And I just stood there and laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed.
You're listening to Valley 104.9 FM, your station for Northwest eclectic music.
Crime will never pay, folks. Crime will never pay. For it's been proven time again that crime will never pay. The road agents are rough and raw, there's some in your hometown. They operate within the law, it's tough to pin them down. The sheriff and I are standing by with good folks in the land to take their loot and prosecute and make them understand. Crime will never pay, folks. Crime will never pay. For it's been proven time again that crime will never pay.
And now for that pleasant moment when we pay our weekly visit to Sherlock Holmes' celebrated friend, the eminent Dr. John H. Watson.
Good evening, Mr. Bell. Come in and sit down.
I thought you might have forgotten your date, Dr. Watson, when I saw that your door was closed.
Not at all, my dear fellow. Rather the opposite. I'm afraid I neglected to keep an eye on the time. I was so deeply engrossed in searching through my files.
With satisfactory results, I trust?
Well, I hope you will find them, sir. You may remember after I told you the story of the lion's mane the week before last, that you asked if Holmes had any other adventures in his beekeeping days.
I do indeed, Dr. Watson.
Well, I've been running through my notes concerning the remarkable affair of the pointless robbery. And I think you will find it thrilling enough to keep you on the edge of your chair.
I'm sure we all will, Dr. Watson.
Well, it all began, Mr. Bell, on a delightful summer morning in August 1913. I was spending the first day of a week's holiday visiting Holmes at the small farm on the South Downs to which he'd retired and where he was devoting himself to nothing more serious than the raising of bees. I must say, Holmes, that the quality of breakfast here convinces me that I've discovered the real reason for your devotion to rustic life.
A very sound deduction, Watson.
And there's much to be said for the peaceful atmosphere of the countryside after the noisy hubbub of London.
A peace which I fear may be only too transient, Watson. I suggest that you omit reading the morning paper during your stay.
Oh, that talk of war in Europe, you mean. Nonsense, Holmes. In this year of our Lord, 1913, no civilized nation would dream of resorting to the outmoded fallacies of armed force.
I trust you're right, Watson. I trust you're right. But,
I say, Holmes, you've got a visitor. Somebody's coming up the path.
It's Mr. Kenmore, the rector of our local church. Another donation is indicated, no doubt. It would take the national budget to keep the church's ancient organ in good repair. Be a good fellow, Watson, and open the door while I refill the teapot.
That you are, Holmes.
Good morning, Mr. Holmes.
Good morning, Mr. Kenmore. This is my good friend, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, doctor?
A cup of tea?
No, thank you. No tea. And I must apologize for this unwarranted intrusion at such an early hour.
Some pressing matter in connection with the church?
No, Mr. Holmes. The cause of my visit is a most mysterious and disturbing occurrence which took place at my residence last night.
Oh, really? I suppose you give me the facts.
No doubt it will seem a minor matter to you, but I feel considerable agitation over it. Briefly, at some time last night, the rectory was broken into by thieves who ransacked the entire house, with the exception of the rooms in which my daughter Alice and I were sleeping.
Oh, gracious me.
And what was stolen?
Nothing. Nothing whatever.
Was the thief frightened off?
No, Mr. Holmes. We knew nothing of it until Alice came downstairs this morning to prepare my breakfast. She found the house in a state of the utmost confusion, obvious signs of forcible entry, and not a single thing missing.
Odd. Very odd.
I hesitate to ask you, Mr. Holmes, to concern yourself with such a trifle, but you know our worthy constable, Tom Wilson.
Yes, an excellent man when it comes to unlighted bicycle lamps, but beyond that... Come, Watson, let's accompany Mr. Kenmore to the rectory and see what we can discover.
So you see, Mr. Holmes, as Father told you, absolutely nothing seems to be missing.
Not that the possessions of a country rector are of such great value.
Nevertheless, that silver service on the sideboard would undoubtedly attract any thief's eye.
A family inheritance, Mr. Holmes, one of my few valuables.
I see that you've got quite a large library, Mr. Kenmore. Any books of great value there?
None at all, Dr. Watson.
Sound suggestion, though, Watson.
Oh,
this French window which gives onto the garden seems to be where the thief made his entry.
Quite. A circle of glass cut out of one of the panes. Then a gloved hand reaching in to turn the key.
A gloved hand, Mr. Holmes?
Undoubtedly, my dear. The blurred impressions are quite characteristic.
And now that you've seen everything, Mr. Holmes, what do you make of it?
It presents a most interesting problem, Mr. Kenmore. The disorder of the rooms would indicate a search for some definite object, even though you assure me that you know of nothing of value in your possession. We must wait for developments. I think you and your daughter should most certainly be on your guard against the thief's return.
You really think
Mr. Kenmore, my friend is apt to see criminals behind every bush, the natural result of a lifelong career.
Perhaps, Watson, perhaps. Well, we must be getting along.
I wonder, Mr. Holmes, if you and Dr. Watson would do me a great favor before you go.
Of course, if it's in our power.
Well,
what is it?
Would you think me too bold if I asked you to let me take a snapshot of you both?
Oh, really, Alice? I gave Alice a camera for her birthday last week, Mr. Holmes, and ever since then, she's been making life miserable for everyone.
I'm sure you could find two handsomer subjects, my dear. But Watson and I will be glad to have you immortalize our pictures.
Yes, of course, naturally.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Holmes. I brought my camera down from my room, hoping you'd say yes.
Well, I'm really sorry. I was just wearing this old Norfolk jacket.
If you stand here, right beside the front door.
Oh, just a moment. The wind's blowing my hair about a bit. Ah, there we are.
All right. Just look this way. Fine. Thank you so much.
I hope you'll spare me a print or two if they turn up, my dear.
I'll be very glad to. As a matter of fact, that was the last picture in the roll. Now I can take it down to the village and have Mr. Dilworthy, the chemist, develop it for me.
I say, we're passing by the chemist's shop. Can't I drop it off for you?
Thank you very much, Mr. Watson. That's very kind. Here it is.
And thank you again, Mr. Holmes, for your kindness in troubling yourself with my problem.
Not at all. And remember, Mr. Kenmore, be on your guard against a return visit. Looks to me as though you're falling asleep over your book, Watson.
I must admit, Holmes, that the combination of country air and that excellent dinner had a very soporific effect on me.
Oh, don't apologize. We country dwellers keep early hours.
It's certainly different from the old days in Baker Street. I'm surprised that you don't miss the excitement of the chase, Holmes.
Professor Moriarty was the spice who kept the daily routine from becoming monotonous. But apparently he, too, seems to be in retirement.
Oh, have you any news of him, Holmes?
The last I heard, Scotland Yard had him fairly definitely located in South America.
South America, huh?
Which would indicate to anyone knowing the professor as well as I do that he may be anywhere on the face of the globe with the exception of South America.
Well, old fella, I'm going upstairs to sleep. What the bell was that?
The church bell. Come on, Watson. There must be something wrong at the rectory.
And I thought the quickest way of raising the alarm, Mr. Holmes, was to sound the church bell.
Very wise. Tell me, Mr. Kenmore, what was the first thing you heard?
A sharp cry from my daughter awakened me, followed by a thud. I rushed into her room and found her.
Well, she'll be all right, don't you worry, Mr. Kenmore. I've had to take several stitches, but she'll have a slight concussion for the next few days. But there's no cause for alarm.
Oh, thank heaven, Doctor. When I rushed in and saw her lying on the floor...
Her assailant had fled by the time you entered?
The open window showed only too clearly the miscreant's path.
Well, you keep her in bed for a few days, give her a light diet, and she'll be right as rain.
Oh, that face. The window.
Well, she's very conscious, poor girl, to be quite expected after such a blow.
No, don't touch me. Please. There on the shelf. No. No.
The sleeping draught that I gave her will take effect soon.
I blame myself, Mr. Holmes, for not having paid more attention to your warning. But I...
That's of no importance now, Mr. Kenmore.
What's that?
Someone at the door. Pardon me. Whist. High time you got here. You received my message?
Oh, take your message as it brought me here, Mr. Kenmore.
Worthy constable, Watson.
There's been worse things happening in the village.
What is it, Wilson?
Oh, good evening, Mr. Holmes. Well, there's fair devil's work afoot tonight.
Oh, come, my man. What's up?
Well, it's Mr. Dilworthy, the chemist.
Well, what about him?
In his rooms where he lives, back of his shop. Dead.
Oh,
lying there on the floor with his head crushed in something savage.
Dilworthy? Oh, horrible. Some prowling thief.
No. Oh, no, sir. With a cash box sitting there in plain sight. With £4 and some odd shillings plain to see and not a penny touched.
Dilworthy. Wait a moment. The ransacking of this house, the attack on Miss Alice, and now this. There's only one common denominator which applies to all three.
I don't understand, Mr. Holmes.
That film from Alice's camera, Watson. After we left here this morning and went to the village, you left it at Dilworthy's?
Of course, I... Oh, it's got a... Oh, matter of fact, Holmes, I'm afraid I forgot all about it. Here's the roll in my pocket. I must apologize to Miss Alice.
Not a bit of it, Watson.
What do you mean, not a bit of it, Watson?
I'm convinced that roll of film holds the solution of the mysterious events of the past 24 hours. And due to your convenient lapse of memory, we are in possession of the prize.
But what prize are we in possession of?
That, Watson, remains to be seen. Come, we just have time to catch the late train for London. Visit the Scotland Yard's laboratory will reveal the precious secret which that film is evidently concealing.
Now, Dr. Watson, what did you discover on that precious roll of film which had already caused the death of one person and a murderous assault upon another?
Well, as soon as we reached Scotland Yard's laboratory, Holmes wasted no time in getting permission to develop photographs.
Just hand me that second tray, will you, Watson? The one this side of the red lamp.
There you are.
There. That does it. Look, Watson. The images are starting to appear.
Oh, I'll take your word for it. That red lamp gives about as much light as a glowworm.
Sorry, but that's all we can use until we finish the development. Look, Watson. They're coming much, much, much more strongly now.
Yes, I see. That seems to be a picture of the rector. Doesn't look to me as though that were worth committing murder for.
There are 12 pictures on the roll, Watson. This next one seems to be a somewhat out-of-focus picture of the directory.
Oh, that third one's sharper. Evidently a croquet match. I'm quite sure that we haven't gone tearing off on a wild goose chase, Holmes.
Impossible, Watson. All the evidence indicates that this film must have been the objective.
Ah, now that looks more interesting. Two girls on the beach in bathing suits. I say, Holmes.
What?
The girl on the left's got a fine figure, eh?
Undoubtedly. But the composition is not improved by those other people in the middle background. I think that... Watson. Hand me that lens, the large magnifier there.
Ah, I thought you were displaying a cavalier lack of interest in such a shapely young lady. Well, I trust it's repaying your intense study.
Look, Watson. Look here. Examine it closely through the lens.
Well, a daring bathing suit, I must say. Has no sleeves.
Not the girl, you idiot.
What? The girl?
The two men in the background. Take a good look at that one on the right.
Well, there's certainly something familiar about him. Holmes, it can't be.
But it is, Watson. Beyond any shadow of doubt,
Professor Moriarty himself, and no nearer to South America than the beaches of England.
But I don't see why Moriarty should have been so anxious to secure this film. After all, Holmes, there's nothing particularly damning in a photograph of two men seated on a beach.
When one of them is the world's most notorious criminal, and when he's quite ready to commit murder to regain the film. Watson, ask the inspector to call us a car.
Where are we going?
You and I and this precious film are paying a visit to Sir Edward at the Foreign Office at once.
Your deduction was absolutely sound, Holmes.
You recognize Moriarty's companion then, Sir Edward?
Beyond any question. He goes by many names, but our files would indicate that the real one is von Schelling, probably the cleverest among the senior members of the Imperial German Secret Service.
Good heavens, a spy.
Yes, precisely, Dr. Watson.
I should imagine, Sir Edward, that his dealings with Moriarty must be of great importance, since they required him to come to England in person.
I'm quite sure of it.
But the peaceful surroundings of the South Downs and the quiet beaches, what would a spy be doing there?
With Portsmouth, England's greatest naval base only a few miles away, and the present situation in Europe, Professor Moriarty does not concern himself with trifles.
Under the circumstances, I have no hesitation in telling you two gentlemen that the first trials of our new battle cruisers had been taking place off Portsmouth these last few days.
Great Scott!
Yes, Doctor, in what we thought was the utmost secrecy.
There's still a ray of hope, Sir Edward. Moriarty would not have gone to such lengths to suppress this photograph had his transactions with von Schelling been completed.
Do you mean, Holmes, that there may still be time to forestall him?
Dr. Watson and I will do whatever is in our power, Sir Edward.
Judging from the sudden change in your expression after your silence this past hour, you've evidently had an inspiration.
We must bait a trap, Watson. And that film must be our bait. Professor Moriarty must be in a fury of his bungling subordinates, who've twice failed to recover. If I know the professor, he'll make the next attempt himself.
Well, you can't take an advertisement in the newspaper, Holmes, to lure Moriarty into a trap.
If Alice and her father will cooperate, I have a method that is better than any advertisement.
Oh? What's that?
Evidently, Watson, you're not acquainted with the post office and the postmistress of the average village, to which Falworth is no exception. She fills the function of a town crier with the utmost efficiency. She will be our advertisement.
Good morning, Mr. Kenmore. And how are you this fine morning? And how is poor Miss Alice coming along?
Very well indeed, thank you, Mrs. Roberts.
Ah, that's a blessing. And what can I do for you today?
A shilling's worth of penny stamps, please.
I do hope the young lady will be up and about again soon. We miss her cheery face.
You know, Mrs. Roberts, there was an odd thing about that robbery at the rectory.
What was that?
All the intruder took was Alice's camera.
Fancy that.
After he struck her down. Not a very valuable bit of loot.
No, indeed.
Alice is glad she happened to remove the film that very afternoon. It's still on the library desk.
Is it really now?
I must remember to have it developed.
Well, it's a mercy that nothing worse happened. Oh, I almost forgot. Here's your stamps, Mr. Kenmore.
And I think I can assure you, Mr. Holmes, knowing our worthy postmistress as I do, that the misinformation I gave her has by now been widely disseminated.
Excellent, Mr. Kenmore. And I appreciate what you and Alice have been willing to risk on behalf of your country.
At least the falsehood I told was in a worthy cause.
I only wish Dr. Watson would let me get out of bed and come downstairs into the library with you when you take up your vigil tonight. I'd like to see that those horrible men get their just desserts.
Really, my dear? You sound almost bloodthirsty.
Well, I can't say that I blame Miss Alice for that. If someone had given me a crack on the head, I'd look forward to their downfall.
Mr. Kenmore, I would have felt happier if you and Alice were not in the house. But with my knowledge of Moriarty, I fear that he may have the place under observation, and the departure of you and your daughter might make him suspicious.
Is that why you and Dr. Watson are wearing those filthy farmer's clothes, Mr. Holmes?
Precisely, my dear. 8 o'clock. Time we were beginning our vigil. Mr. Kenmore, you will remain on guard with Alice here in her room. No matter what happens in the library, this is your post of duty.
Very well, Mr. Holmes.
You have your service revolver, Watson?
Certainly.
Come then. We must be concealed and in readiness for our visitor at whatever hour he may arrive.
Only 2 o'clock. I'm so cramped from standing behind these curtains that I thought it must be the morning.
What price the peaceful countryside now, Watson?
Well, I must say
that...
What is it?
A faint sound on the gravel path. It might be a nocturnal animal or... No, there it is again. Footsteps. Is your gun ready, Watson?
Ready, Holmes.
You'll probably come through the French windows. It's the most inviting entrance. On your guard. Cutting up a pane of glass. Don't move. We've got you covered. The light switch, Watson, with your left hand. There. Well, Professor Moriarty, we meet again.
If it isn't Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Keep that gun on him, Watson, while I see if he's carrying a weapon.
And render myself liable to a long prison sentence. My dear Holmes, your retirement to pastoral pursuits must have impaired your reasoning powers.
It's all right, Watson. He's unarmed. You can lower your hands now, Professor. But I'd strongly advise against making any sudden move.
I wish he would, the dirty traitor.
I'm inclined to agree with your sentiments, Watson. Moriarty, for once I intend to take the law into my own hands. I can forgive a criminal, or a forger, or a thief, or even a murderer. But a traitor is something else.
I don't understand what you're driving at.
Certain backward Balkan countries, Moriarty, have an extremely convenient system of disposing of unwanted prisoners. They are invariably shot while attempting to escape.
You wouldn't dare. You who have always stood on the side of the law.
Have you ever known me to break my word? I assure you, Moriarty, that unless you consent to turn over von Schelling to us, together with any information you have for him, you will be dead by the time I count 10. And I promise you that Watson won't hesitate either.
No, you bet I won't, Holmes.
Take your choice, Moriarty. 1, 2, 3, 4.
All right, Holmes. You win. This time.
A wise decision. Where were you to meet von Schelling, and what were you to deliver to him?
At midnight, tomorrow, on a beach 6 miles south of here. He has a rendezvous there with a submarine that is to take him back to Germany. And the figures on the new cruisers are hidden at my lodgings in Portsmouth.
We'll keep that appointment with von Schelling tomorrow night. And to make sure that you have no chance for further treachery, you'll remain with us until he's in our hands. This is the spot, Professor Moriarty?
500 yards south of the abandoned dock, yes.
Very well. Watson and I will remain here behind these bushes. You, Professor, will walk out alone onto the sands. I intend to take no chances of scaring off our quarry.
I haven't much choice in the matter.
Just a moment.
Yes?
Remember that we have you in plain sight, that the moonlight is strong, and that the slightest sign of treachery will be the signal for your well-deserved execution.
I won't forget, Mr. Holmes.
I hate to think of him going scot-free, Holmes.
You cannot hate it more than I do, Watson. But letting him go free is a cheap price to pay for the scotching of his plans and the capture of von Schelling. Here comes a car. Listen, Mr. von Schelling. No one else would be on this deserted road at this hour of night.
Oh, the car's stopping.
Well, there's only one man in it. He's getting out. It is von Schelling.
Ah, dear Professor. I knew I could depend on you.
Right, Watson.
Put up your hands, you.
The devil's...
Look out, Watson. Quick work, Watson.
Oh, curse you, Moriarty. You have betrayed me.
Precisely, Herr von Schelling. But why should the fact that a traitor will engage in a double betrayal surprise you?
He'll be all right, Holmes. Barring a nasty flesh wound in his leg.
Well, Mr. Holmes, you have the papers and the spy.
I've kept my part of the bargain. Now you keep yours.
Don't worry, Moriarty, I shall. But you can count yourself lucky that the stakes for which we were playing were far more value than your traitorous life. I promise you that next time we meet, you will pay your long overdue reckoning.
I shall look forward to it. Au revoir.
Till our next meeting.
What infernal cheek. I hate to see him go free.
No more than I do, Watson. Well, at least we've had the best of the bargain. Now let's load our prisoner into the car.
And who are you, anyway? The devil?
Oh, hardly so eminent a personage, von Schelling. My name is Sherlock Holmes.
So, I might have guessed. Oh,
he's fainted. Just as well, perhaps. Here, Holmes, we'll put him in the back seat of the car. Well, you've got the spy, and that finishes that.
I wonder. There's an east wind coming, Watson.
East wind? Oh, I don't think so, Holmes. It's particularly warm.
Good old Watson. You're the one fixed point in a changing age. There's an east wind coming all the same. Such a wind has never blew on England yet. It will be cold and bitter, and a good many of us may wither before its blast. But it's God's own wind nonetheless, and a cleaner, better, stronger land will lie in the sunshine when the storm has cleared. Start the car up, Watson. It's time we're on our way.
About this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.